Omigyanatimirandasya Jnananjana Savakaya Saksur Mritam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Sapadantikam Vansha Kalpa Karubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasade Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare So greetings from New York City. I'm staying, this one devotee has a bed and breakfast next to the temple, and he gave me one apartment. This weekend, I've been doing this 15-hour bhakti course. I have 6 hours today. I'm not sure I can go the full time, just maybe have to conserve some of the energy. Some of you may have heard that Gopi Pranadana has passed away. And I knew him well because one of the places I stay is Govardhan, and that was also his home. And I kind of felt he was in transit, only being there for 2 days, and he got to leave his body in Govardhan. I kind of felt it was just nice that he was such a dedicated person. You know, and usually it's very hard to do things like scholarship. Anything that we do, you know, generally we do those things because we like to do them. And we give the results to Krishna. That's devotional service. But I think that the extraordinary nature was that devotional service was so prominent in his life, and the scholarship was done as a result of devotional service. It's kind of like the difference between yat karoshi and asnasi. You know, whatever you're doing, whatever you eat, and make as an offering to me. And patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakta prayachati. That if you offer me with love a fruit, water, flower, I will accept it. So in the purest sense of devotion, the love comes first and then the activity. And to become purified to that state, we have to take our attachments and activities and offer them to Krishna. Of course, bhakti is not renunciation, it's dedication. So we're not trying to get away from activities of what we can use in God's service. And that's a very, very broad topic. When I was speaking at the yoga teacher training, you know, I spoke very, very strongly about what the concept of bhakti is. I'm going to go into a little bit of what I spoke today, because one thing, I packed to India. I didn't take my Brihat Bhagavatamrita because someone's going to put it on my computer. Rati's going to arrange for that when I go next weekend, so I don't have the book. But the way I started my seminar, and I think I can also do this with you, and I think it'll be very, very interesting, is I asked the people to think and meditate very deeply how they would like others to see them. You can also think about that. Then I asked the question, what do you do to get people to view you in that way? And then I asked the question, why? And what I was trying to indicate to them is, what's the nature of material consciousness? That you have a particular image of yourself, or what you would like to be seen, as basically a person in control, a person in the center. And your vision is to see other things as an object for that. And sometimes, I'd like people to see me as humble, but why do you like people to see you as humble? Because that's what people would respect. It would enhance your ability to control and the environment. I was just trying to material, and then I started speaking about spiritual consciousness. That rather being self-centered, it's God-centered. And we see God in the center, and rather than seeing others as things as objects of our desire, we see ourselves as the object of God's desire. We become the object. One second, okay. And so I was explaining bhakti from that position. And then I gave different stories of saints. Some of my favorite ones is when I was visiting Bhakti Pramodpuri Maharaj. He's 100 years old. Really humble person. You know what you'll be like if you live to 100? Whoa. When your eyelids begin to droop over your eyes. And so he was upstairs, and it was a fast day because it was the appearance day of disappearance day of Srila Bhaktidaita Madhava Maharaj, one of the great disciples and preachers of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, and it was his mutt, and his senior disciple was a friend of mine named Mangal Maharaj, who had come to America, who had stayed at Prabhupada in 1950. So I was visiting him. He asked me to come because it was his guru's disappearance. I was upstairs in the room, and people were fasting till noon. And then this brahmachari comes in and says, he yelled. He said, it's time for the feast. All the devotees must come now. And there was like a stampede of brahmacharis out the door. And I'm sitting there, and I'm watching this old man get up with a bent back and struggling to walk out. And then his assistant said, where are you going, Marge? Don't you know we'll bring the food to you? And then he says, when the Vaishnavas command, I must obey. And then I told the story, and this happened to me twice, that I was visiting Ramesh Baba's ashram. And I came with the devotees. We got there late at 1. It was just on the Barsana Frikram. So I do a little kirtan and going, and then somebody said, would you like to see Ramesh Babu? He said, we don't, you know, it's like 1:30, you know, we don't want to bother him. He said, no, come. So he brings us all the way up to his room, and we come into his room, and he's sitting on his bed, taking, eating prasad. He's eating some, drinking some soup. As soon as we can't come in, he looks at us and says, is there any service for me? So I was explaining to these people, you know, what really a Vaishnava is. How he doesn't see the world in terms, his desire is not prominent. God's desire is prominent. And the desires and needs of others become prominent. Generally, materialistic consciousness means we see the world according to our own desire. Spiritual consciousness means we see, and love in general means, when you love someone, you see the world according to their desires. You're more concerned that the environment moves around them than you are that the environment moves around you. We all know we have this selfishness in us. I was giving example after example. And some very intelligent people, you know, and cultured. They would, you know, they have that samskara of student teacher. There wasn't an inkling of anything challenging. There was always submissive inquiry. I was very impressed with these people. Very gentle and sweet people. But intelligence, so someone, you know, they asked the question, of course, what about our needs? You know, what about, you know, our personal needs? And obviously, being in New York, which is Puranic. Not old, but Purana, like Pryant, what is it? Purana. Those fish that eat everybody else up. You're in an ocean of piranhas, is that it? That's kind of the word, but, you know, you can be. So anyway, I explained so many things. What's codependence? What's humility? But I said, you know, yeah, we take care of our needs. But first of all, the ultimate need is spiritual. And we take care of our own. Anyway, I can, somehow my mind's not going there to explain it, but people were satisfied. What can I say? I gave the example of the hand is in relationship to the body. So if the hand gets cut, you repair the hand. But you repair the hand in relationship to its function towards the body. So we take care of our needs, but in relationship, ultimately, in relationship to ultimately who we are, which is spiritual. It's connected there. When we say that everything is secondary to prema, it doesn't mean that other things are not important. They may be essential for prema. And we've even seen that in the development of the Krishna conscious movement, that if people artificially renounce their needs in relationship to the higher goal of prema and renounce things that they legitimately require, then later on they find out that the satisfaction of those needs in an appropriate way is exactly what they need to pursue Krishna consciousness. That's why I made that point. I tried to get by the hand. The hand's function is to serve the body. But it doesn't mean you don't take care of the hand. But why take care of the hand? For the function of the hand. So why take care of you and your coverings and your body? For the function of the body. And it's a whole subtle field of the relationship between social and psychological and physical and spiritual. You have to take care of those things. But at the same time, I gave the example. Funny how the simple examples, you know, when you're in ISKCON class, you may have heard the example 1,000 times, they don't give you a buzz. But I gave the example. I said, just if the hand was, you know, chewing food, independent of its function. It wouldn't be serving its needs. And serving others that are doing things that are not serving their function. Of course, again, food serves the function. You need the body. Body has to be replenished, to proceed in life and develop and ultimately become self-realized. That's why it said even at praying, one doesn't give up. At Bhava, one doesn't give up his body. He needs the body to practice, to go further, to serve Krishna. So, and what about service to others? Like I said, you know, if two hands are separate entities and one hand is in harm, then the other hand would help the other hand because it's part of the body. So, rare, really, what pure devotional service is where love comes first. And based on love, you serve. Where the love actually is the prime motivating force. But it was also edifying to speak to people outside like this. Somehow the classes become very interesting. And the seminar is dividing bhakti into different sections. So the first day was bhakti in ritual. Then yesterday morning was bhakti in philosophy. Then in the evening, we all went to the Radha Govinda Mandir for 3 hours. We did bhakti and seva. This morning will be bhakti and mantra. That starts at 12:30. And at the end will just be bhakti and sacred place. I'll still speak about Padam. But you have, just like with everybody else, you know, when you speak about renunciation, you speak about humility, So I gave a simple definition between the difference between humility and a lack of self-esteem. I explain humility means you're insignificant, or you're not great constitutionally, and you don't want to be great. You're happy to be a servant. And I always describe that size has nothing to do with capacity to love. And love is happiness. So humility, you don't desire to be great, but you're happy to be a servant. Lack of self-esteem is you want to be great, and therefore you're not happy to be a servant. You're not happy to be in control. And anyway, in deity worship, because the basic paradigm I was trying to show the people, and I do it with my hands, which you can't see on the phone, but that's what bhakti means. It's kind of a happy peripheral consciousness, wanting to be the object for the pleasure of God and others. Now, of course, people came up questioning, this person has needs, and he's asking me this, and again, I can't satisfy. And then I explained codependence, that it's being humble means that you serve the desire of God and those that are pure, and the needs of others. The need of a person, the need of the hand is to serve the body. The need of the soul is to serve God and to be fit for that purpose. I said, humility doesn't mean you serve people's whims. You don't serve the desires of those that are impure. you serve their needs according to some standard. It's like a child, you know. The child, I want. The parent decides. The parent loves. What does my child need? What are the desires he has that are appropriate for his psychological and social health right now? And so, not that you serve the whim. Now I'm the servant, and okay, child says, I want Toys R Us. You buy him the store. I want this game. Buy him the store. So, you know, we got in all those points. They're relevant to anyone to hear. And then deity worship, Sri Vrindavan from New Jersey came. He gave a very nice lecture. And it was also nice for people to see a Vaishnav family. And he discussed in a very nice way, I guess it's one thing he does like to discuss, how to reconcile the multiple identities we have. You know, he said, if you got a job offer, go to Texas. That solves his, so how is he going to make the decision? So if he makes a decision that just he's a professional, but he's not just a professional, he's also a father. He has a daughter. He's also a husband, you know. So there's conflict because, okay, he goes to Texas, but then what if there's no school for the kid? Or they're going to a community that, you know, there's no community, there's no temple or what? Or his wife's parents are, you know, in New Jersey. So you have multiple identities that have conflicting needs. So how do you resolve them? So he was discussing, he said, like when you cut an onion, there's different peels, but there's a core. He said the core is spiritual. So we have to weigh the fulfillment of our needs based ultimately on our eternal function of serving Krishna. So you weigh all of them. And the conclusion is, the ultimate identity is I'm a servant of Krishna, and what's best for that? And what's best for that doesn't mean, I renounce the world, because that may not be best. You may have desired. But altogether, that's the core, your ultimate function. What is best serving your desires, which serve your function? So I've been having a great time. I mean, if there's anything I love to do, it's this. And the quality of people and to really give knowledge that allows people to transform themselves at this level. These are people, they're qualified people. You know, Sri Vrindavan's from a Brahmin family. He just wrote me a letter. He just said, just thank you so much. These people are so sincere. They're just so sincere, so eager to learn. And they put their money where their mouth is. A lot of these people are yoga teachers. It's kind of, you know, a little bit of a struggle. They pay a lot of money for these seminars. I mean, they're going to get 4 weeks of 15 hours about devotion. I'm also, because like yesterday they heard from Ananta Chuta and they heard a little from Sri Vrindavan. So, I'm a strategist in terms of how much they can digest. I mean, they have so much to assimilate. Today we'll do more practical stuff. We'll have an hour kirtan. We'll do japa meditation. I'll do, so many things like that. So it's been edifying. And another thing that came out too, is I explained the necessity for dialectic, because, and this is just a classic example, you speak something, people filter it through their intelligence based on their experience. So you're speaking, if you speak according to your experience, and a person has a different experience, he will view what you're saying in a different way. So what you have to do is not just speak according to your own experience. Actually, better, you have to speak according to their experience. And one issue came up when Sri Vrindavan spoke. You know, he just spoke Krishna and the Lord and God, and they really appreciated his lecture. And the next day, one lady raised her hand. I just have kind of problem with God. I grew up a Catholic, and I really have a problem with God. You know, I really don't really know what you mean by God. You know, so you can just see, they're filtering by their experience. So I explained to them, first of all, I'm not here to convert people. I'm here to explain bhakti. And bhakti is a yoga, which is theistic. I explained to them what Advaita Vedanta is, and I said we're going to get to that when we get to the Yoga Sutras, because we have, as some of the verses discuss, the nature of God. But I told them, I'm not here, I'm just telling you what this thing. And then I said, and I can prove it by logic, but we'll discuss reasonably why God. And it's just been really wonderful, and they thank Adi here. I don't know what he calls it, but it's amazing. I mean, he's got about 10 apartments, and he has a nice living room space for the bed and breakfast for all the apartments share. And I go down there because I can download email there, and I go there to pick up fruit for my breakfast and things like that. And you meet a lot of nice people. That's good. And then, of course, the questions came. I explained them the concept. I just really honed in on them the importance of self-realization to be satisfied and be happy. You have to know who you are, because you have to create your harmony between yourself and your actions. Again, going back to Gopi Pranadana, it was just really edifying to see such a scholar who really did it as a service and really wasn't interested in it that much further than service. So, it's exemplary. It's certainly exemplary. And it is a great loss to the Krishna consciousness movement, because there's so many great souls and so many people that are acting as teachers and gurus but he was only one, practically the only qualified Vaishnava scholar. And Prabhupada also said, this translation work, it's not an ordinary thing. Even when he left, he indicated, people can carry on this, but that was special. Anyway, I spoke to Prajumna. He was pretty shaken up about it. He's the one that called and informed me. He came to see me in the morning. And that was also edifying, because he told me some really interesting stories of, he has, it's just amazing. They told me one story that he told me 35 years ago. I just thought it was interesting. And he told me a few things that they're always edifying. And he said one time, Prabhupada had a servant, and the servant liked to eat a lot, and then he needed to do exercise, and he'd do yoga, and then he'd, So one day he was massaging Prabhupada, and he asked Prabhupada, and this person related it personally to Prajumna, asked Prabhupada, Prabhupada, I need to, I think we need to do exercise. Prabhupada said, I'll show you. And he told Pradyumna that Prabhupada did one shaky push-up. And Pradyumna was laughing. Person wanted to get yoga, and he got push-ups. And the other story he told me, which was nice, when he visited the opening of this place, and maybe it was in Puri, by the same Bhakti Dayat Maharaj, and he, Pradyumna went there, and all Prabhupada's godbrothers were there. And he said, you know, he saw in one room, you know, that they were going to bed, but it was a very crowded place. In one room, he saw just lying on the floor, Akinchana Krishna Das Babaji and Bhanma, you know, just it's the concept and image, you know, the simple renunciate. It's very, very inspiring, which is hard to imitate when you're traveling around the world. And but still, you know, that core of simplicity, you know, just when I thought of that image of all these exalted souls just taking rest on the floor, putting out a blanket and like resting on the floor, and the inspiration, and why a society needs a truly renounced order of life. Of course, we're not, Vaishnavas are not, you know, it's not, path is not renunciation, it's dedication. But there's a class, or there should be some people, that what they dedicate is their simplicity for the benefit of society. It doesn't mean that you're a sannyasi, you can dedicate everything and you get married, then you're not a sannyasi. So the simplicity, and how, because naturally in bhakti, we've discussed in the Yoga Sutras, is that when your heart becomes filled up with love, then your fervor, you know, for this and that should go. So as people advance in spiritual life, they will become more simple. You know, I mean, if they're a king, they may need to have accoutrements of power, and people have certain proclivities and desires that require different amounts of things to be happy. But generally, whatever level you're at, as your heart becomes increasingly filled with love, you require less and less externally. So it's nice to see that, and that's the Varnashram generally. Varnashram means if you want the top position, you have to be renounced. You can't have your cake and eat it. There's different levels of renunciation, different ways people renounce. But that image of sacrifice and simplicity and renunciation should be there. And if you want to control, then you have to be number two. You can't be the top authority. It's a very nice image there. You know, I'm going to basically stop now. You notice perhaps I'm speaking a little bit less energetic than I usually do. One, because it is exhausting to teach so many hours. And two, is I'm conserving my energy. And my nature, of course, is once I get revved up, the movement of my hands takes a lot of energy. Would anybody like to ask a question?
Maharaj?
Yeah,
Maharaj?
Hello.
Parabol, it's Mahamuni, Dhanavat Pranams. And thanks for another really great class. It's nice to remember Gopi Purandana Prabhu, but also I really appreciated the points you were making about bhakti generally. I can hear in your voice already, your voice is tired, so I have
it's
a question.
It's not actually,
but
what I'm doing is I'm specifically going against my nature. It's one of the few classes that my hands are not, like, you know, moving all over the place. And, you know, I'm trying to, like, relax and conserve the energy for the program. But anyway, if I come in there with low blood pressure, people think I'm more advanced.
I also appreciate that you even did the class today. I know when I have, like, just to do 6 hours of this, I know it's going to be pretty intense. And so thank you for doing the class. And it would have been a reasonable day to say that you couldn't do it. So thank you. My question, Marsh, is about earlier in the discussion, we're talking about how that in the practice of book, we learn to relate, you know, all of our various interests and dharmas to service.
Yeah.
And it seemed to me you were making a certain point, but I want to make sure I understood you. If you just give me 1 second to kind of give a framework for it, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, no, I don't mind. I prefer someone else talk.
Since at least from the time of the great philosopher Aristotle, there's a recognition between things that are valuable in and of themselves and things that are valuable purely instrumentally. And so, for example, money is valuable only instrumentally because it can procure your object. But in and of itself, it's only valuable maybe insofar as, like, the paper you could burn or something if it was cold. You know, that's the only real value money would have in and of itself or whatever. And so it seemed to me that what you were saying is that the various relationships we have in this world and various dharmas that we participate in, are they completely instrumentally valuable to achieve prema, and they don't have value independent of that? Or is it something more nuanced where there may be some value there, but if it's not seen in relation to prema, then you're not really taking advantage of it? You know, because this is something you and I have talked about for a few years, and I'm trying to understand if that's
I would say like this, too. It's tricky because, you know, there's kind of like an ultimate value in it, but the value in it is not always connecting it to the ultimate value. The value is in it having legitimate relationships, you know, and not just like that they're for something else, you know. Intellectually or philosophically, you know, and there also may be something intrinsic in it. We discuss it because the person's part of God, you know, and is serving them in a way, etc. But you can't divorce one from the link, you know. You can't. How you deal with it psychologically, it may not be, you know, okay, now I'm, you know, loving my daughter because, you know, I wanted to be a devotee of Krishna. And, you know, ultimately, you know, it's a psychological need you have that you don't have to, you know, analyze and philosophize about, because it'll probably ruin its instrumental value at the same time. you won't get the psychological satisfaction you need, right, to be an integrated whole being, you know. So it's kind of a very interesting thing in the same sense, you know. In one sense, its value is instrumental, but if you look at it instrumentally, it loses all its value instrumentally.
Well, the other thing is things can be both instrumentally valuable and intrinsically valuable. I mean, it doesn't have to be either or.
Case. Right.
Yeah. But
they are instrumentally valuable, and they are valuable intrinsically in itself, but what is it intrinsic? The intrinsic value of it is its connection to God.
I don't want to burden you with another distinction, but because this is something because I've been reading some tantric, I mean good tantra, not the crazy stuff, literature.
He's a tantric, you know.
You might, but you know, a point that's made there, and I think our tradition coming from Lord Chaitanya is tantric in this good sense that that things are valuable like other people. When we say it's because they're connected with God, it seems to me there's two ways to understand that, and both may be true in some way. But one thing is the reason we find like they are valuable, that is true, And but their value is because they are in fact a spark of God, and that's what's valuable about them. We just don't always appreciate that fact.
They're valuable the other way in themselves because they're a part of God.
Okay, good. Okay, that I like that one. The other one is something like this. Yeah, they're valuable because of the connection with God, but somehow, like, if you don't see that, you know, they're just useless in some way. That's not what you were saying, I don't think.
No, they're not useless.
Yeah.
Because even if you don't see it, they have value.
Right, exactly. Okay, great. All right. Well, thank you, Marsh. I appreciate that. Thanks for helping clarify that.
Great. Thank you. That's good. These discussions are very helpful. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna.
Anybody else like? Hey, Parvo Gail.
Do you remember that very last line you said to Mahamuni about value? Or Mahamuni, do you remember what satisfied you just now, that last line, if you're still there? Oh, well.
I think, Marsh, do you remember? Should I try to take a stab at it?
Do it.
You said because even something has value.
Like in other words, sorry, excuse me.
Go ahead.
Marsh, did you remember? Do you want to say?
No, no. Go ahead.
If I remember, the point that Marsh was making that I appreciated was that there are things in the world that we find valuable, particularly people or relationships, and that when we say that they're valuable because of the connection with Krishna, what we're saying is, yeah, this individual self or soul or whatever is valuable, and that's just a fact. And but what makes them valuable, like the kind of underpinnings or whatever that actually make them valuable, which they are, is that very way in which they're a spark of Krishna, their real identity. Does that make sense? Anyway, that's how I understood it. So in other words, is that different from saying what makes them valuable is your connection with Krishna, and therefore, if you don't see them connected with Krishna, they're not valuable at all, something like that. No, there's an inherent value, but that...
Or, you would say, they're valuable because they're connected with Krishna, but if you look at it in a particular way, you're actually saying they have no value.
Say it again,
anyway.
Please.
You say it that way, I think what you're saying, too, you're saying, if you look at it, their value... is only because they're connected to Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
What you want to say is that they really have intrinsic value. But you can look at it another way. Because their value is only connected to Krishna, they're not intrinsically valuable. And therefore, you don't think they're valuable.
Right, which is the way that I was worried about. Exactly.
Right, of course. That's good. Okay. Anybody like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj.
Hi, Bo. I heard Stella.
Hi. Hi, Bo Maharaj. Please accept my humble obeisance.
Thank you. Thank you. I'll be at Henry's, our friend Henry's, from Monday through Thursday. Yeah, I'm looking forward.
Wonderful.
Good.
Great.
Anybody else like to say hello? Thank you.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, Gautam Bhakta Das.
Very well. We'll see everybody next week in New Jersey.
Yes, Maharaj.
That's great. Thank you. Anybody else? Okay. Thank you all.